It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and good morning.
Hey, good morning, Arrow. We're here with Eric and Nicole, and I know you didn't know beforehand, but the station after you had to drop.
Oh.
So if you would like to take a double and go until 31, you absolutely can.
Oh, I like talking to Eric, so yeah, we're gonna take it to 51.
All right. Take it away, Arrow, whenever you're ready.
Eric, man, first of all, thank you so much for the tweet today, dude. That's you know how to make someone's day, don't you?
It's all good, dude. Good morning.
Wow, you and your acting, you take on these roles that get inside my head and I can't shake them. I mean, this movie, The Surprise Visit, is one of those where I'm still thinking about it.
I love hearing you say that. I love this movie because it can happen to any of us.
Oh, well, that you must be reading my notes here, because I said there's reality in this story. My drug addicted brother stealing from my parents. Right away, I saw my brother in this movie.
I love hearing that. This movie was also shot. It's also based completely on a true story, you know.
Where was it shot at?
Shot in Virginia on the most beautiful estate I have ever seen, let alone worked on. It was built in like 1730 or something, way back when. Had like 12 outbuildings, all made of that kind of stone that you can't get a knife in between the stones. One of those kind of beautiful places. And, we shot it at the beginning of the pandemic, so everybody was always masked up except when we're acting. Nobody got sick in the whole production, nobody. And so it was really a success in filmmaking. It went really well.
When you go to a movie set like that during a pandemic, do you find yourself being a frontline worker as well? Because we need entertainment, and you're putting your own self on the line when you go up there to do those movies.
Well, that's a great and noble way to put it, but I don't think of, you know, myself as very noble, but sure, I'll take it, but it was just, you have to be real grown-ups, because it's a germ that if you talk into your friend without your mask, you can, you know, either get it or give it. So you just have to be a grown-up, and you have to be, you know, commonly courteous with everybody living.
Yeah.
You know, you can't forget. And it's on the outs now. You know, the first one back in 1918 took you 3 years, you know, to get rid of, but we didn't keep our notes on it, so we just acted the same way again. So it took 3 years. That's just how it is.
As a creative person, if somebody were to come up to you with a script that was about 1918, because so many of us do not know that. We have stories about it, but not like what we're going through here. And I think that's what's great about this generation here, is that we're going to document this darn thing.
Yeah, it'll be remembered properly. And so when it does happen again, because it will, it will not be so overwhelming or so devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to that set. When you as an actor step out there on a set like that, because I'm from Montana, so I know the lay of the land when it's beautiful, and it really captured my attention. What does that do for you as that creative person? Because you were out there on that ATV, it looked like you were having the time of your life when you were driving it.
I did. I love this cast. I love this crew and everybody. As I said earlier, it was at the beginning of the pandemic. So, we were all overly cautious, overly careful, and, we all acted like grownups, and we made it work. But what it does for me as an actor, when you're in the proper setting, as that was, it's like getting dressed in the proper clothes.
Yep.
It's perfect. It's a last little detail that makes everything fit. And it's the same as you get dressed as a character, when you put on clothes that you don't wear, or a hat that you never wear as a person, but as this character you do. And that's your last little crown of, yes, I am this person now. And it's the same with the atmosphere and locations and the set. When it's perfect. It takes you with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can so relate with that because it's like, you know, a radio person wearing earphones. If I don't have the right pair of earphones on, you're not going to get the best performance.
You're so right. I love that because when I loop, I always say, I got to have good headsets, guys. Got to hear myself. Yeah, good for us, man.
So I got to tell you, am I wrong or weird to say that this movie has kind of a Sid and Nancy relationship to it?
Oh, good for you. I love that. Yeah, I would say so. It's a love-hate thing.
Mm-hmm. Because I have such a relationship. As bad as some scenes are, I still have a relationship, compassion. I chose to listen, to try to understand.
Well, that's because you're smarter than the average audience. but I like say that because I am the average audience, and you're obviously smarter than me.
Yeah, but it's so relatable, though. It's in the way that the way that it spells itself out. It doesn't sit there and clog up my imagination where I'm trying to figure it out. I allowed it to play out.
Well, let me give your audience a little rundown, okay? A young couple makes a surprise visit to mom, mm-hmm. and they get an even bigger surprise by an old family friend who plans to steal mom's expensive jewelry while she's out of town. But the easy peasy robbery goes wrong, resulting in the death of one of the kids. And it just goes haywire after that. When somebody gets you killed by accident, oh my God, what do we do? Here we have it. And everything goes, hey, it's so much fun to watch, dude. I love this little movie.
It's almost like you could be the movie trailer guy in a movie somewhere in Virginia.
Thank you. I love that because I want to be for this movie.
And it's going to be up on theater screens, right? Because, I mean, this is one of those movies that needs to be seen because of the openness. I mean, the wide views and everything like that you get from the director.
I know Nick Lyon was our boss. Great young director. And he really captured that wealth. That wealth that this woman has.
So now, when you do a movie that's based on a real story, do you go and do the research for this, or do you allow the script or the manuscript to play itself out?
Well, you don't have a choice. You will use your manuscript as a guide.
Right.
Your script as a guide. But you know, the homework is a homework. And when you're playing a real people, you have to do real things. You can't make it up. So the hardest time I ever had with that, I had a really great leader, though, Bob Fosse, was in Star 80 when I played Paul Snyder, the guy who killed Dorothy Stratton. And that was very difficult because it had to be very precisely another person and who was a real person everybody knew. So that was hard. This, nobody knew these people. So we just had to do the story properly.
One of the most powerful scenes I've seen in a long time is that final scene. You know what takes place in that when he comes up onto things. My God, I mean, it was so intense. And then the way that they close the motion picture. Unbelievable. That's exactly the way I want to see a movie.
Don't give it away.
I'm not going to.
I know. I'm so proud of this ending. I'm so proud to be a part of it. Nick Lyon kicked ass, didn't he? Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Now, for you to be in that moment, not giving it away, I don't want to do that, but still, the way that you had some John Wayne-ism in you where you controlled that scene.
Oh, thank you, brother. That was all with Nick Lyons, you know his guidance. So that was not me. He was the real boss of this movie. I did not, you know, walk in and say, I'm going to do this. I like walked in and said, okay, what are we doing? And he told me. And he made a really good movie, huh?
Yeah. So then basically, maybe a trick for future actors and stuff like that is the act of acting is you have to be a listener first. Listen to the people that have the vision and then build it.
Of course you do. Because you know, they're who actually gave you the idea and the script. So you know they're your boss. They're why you're there. So that's your job. And you know, when they ask you to improv, you just have to tell them that if you let this horse out of the barn, you gotta have the rope ready to catch it, you know? And yeah, this group, Nick Lyon was honestly truly a great new find as a director. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic.
To work with somebody like that, because you know he's going to have a history and he's going to have a legacy to go with that. Is it one of those? Because I mean, you've been a part of 500 production pieces. This guy really has gotten inside your heart.
Well, the real deal will always do that for me, and Nick Lyon is the real deal, and he's also funny and sweet. So he's it's a pleasure to know him.
When you do you get together with the writing crew as well, or is it all prepared for you when you first sit down with the set and stuff like that? Because I've always wanted to be a fly on the wall. I'm not union enough to get onto the set of a movie.
It all depends on the production itself. Like I did Babylon for Damien Chazelle, and that set, it's all Damien. Mm-hmm. And you have your script, and then after he gets his shot, he plays. He then says, okay, now we're doing this. We're going to have fun. And so every set is different, and every set, it all like starts in with your director, and it works down. And if he is open and artistic and he's talented and he's prepared, it will show. It will show through who he's cast and why, and his story and everything else. It all shows through the director.
Oh my God, that prepared is such a big word in my heart, because I mean, you have got to be prepped. If you're not, then those around you, then that shows a weakness.
They will leave you in the dust, dude.
Yep, they sure will. So what is it like for you? You grew up here in the South, you're in the Georgia area and stuff like that. It just seems like the Southeast is really becoming that place where there's a lot of Hollywood cameras.
I wouldn't know, because I left in 1975. Okay. So... But Danny McBride said, when we shoot Righteous Gemstones, Jack, you're gonna fall in love with the South again. We have a great location, a great spot. You're gonna love this place, and he was right. We're shooting that in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. In fact, where in South Carolina?
Charleston.
Oh my and God,
just unbelievable, dude. Oh my God, it's beautiful. It's great food. It's great scenery. Great weather. I love it all.
Oh, I'm here in Charlotte. So Charleston is my place, man. I get out there on Folly Beach to go out to that lighthouse, and or even with the Ravenel Bridge, the big bridge that goes across the bay there.
Right. I know that bridge.
Oh, my God. Have you ever gotten out there, put on some sunglasses, and just taken a walk across it? I mean, it's like you're walking with the universe.
I have not, but I will now.
Yeah, it's just because the everything is just so open. You get to see old time Charleston mixed in with everything that's going on over there in Mount Pleasant and stuff like that. It's like you can see for miles, like a Colorado Rocky mountaintop.
Nice.
How much time are you gonna spend in South Carolina? Because you know, when it comes to South Carolina, you're gonna fall in love with those rolling hills.
Well, you know, we started the third season. We started our third season of Righteous, I think, in 2.5 months.
Good.
So I'll be down there for probably 6 months straight after that.
Holy cow. It's going to be in season for the flowers. You're going to be there during the most beautiful time of the year.
I know. I'm from the Southeast, dude. I know it.
Now, one of the things that is very inspiring about you, and I know that listeners need to know this more about your roots and your history, is that you made the transition from daytime to movies. As a creative person, how did you move through that? Because a lot of people don't make that jump.
Well, it was not a matter of choice. It was a matter of circumstance. And what happened was I got a job on a soap called Another World. I played, yep. I played the first Ted Bancroft, and to be not humble, but honest, I was terrible in that the technique on a soap is you get your script the night before and you learn it and you go shoot it. And it is difficult. And you get page after page of dialogue. Like sometimes you have like 12 page scenes. Mm. That's 12 minutes of talking. That is tons of talking. And, I'm a very slow learner. I learn lines very slowly. So with the soap, I was always behind. I was never very good. And I was always self-conscious. So I was never very good on my soap. And it was only after they fired me, because Paul Rauschen called me into his office one day. He said, "Are you a writer?" I said, "No." He said, "Why are you writing new dialogue for yourself?" I said, because I want to. He says, well, I don't want you to anymore. Don't do it ever again. If you do, I'll fire you. I said, okay. So I was a good boy for 6 months, and then I rewrote a line, and he called me and then fired me.
Oh,
and he just said, I told you, you're fired. So I was devastated. Oh my God, I'll never work again. And everybody knows I got fired. I have a big black mark against me. Oh my God, I'm horrible. And then the next week, I got an audition for King of the Gypsies, my first movie. Got the movie. So it all worked out in the end, but it was frightening at first. And it was not a transition I made by choice. It was a transition I made by circumstance.
I love moments like that where you have the, you know, the in the office conversations with those in control. Because I had a boss one time tell me, he says, this is not about being creative. This is about cash flow. And right now you're a rock in a stream and you're interrupting the flow. And it's like, yeah, baby, that's me.
Wow, that's rough, dude. Interrupting the flow, rocking a stream. I'm sorry to hear those bad words.
Well, it's always one of those things that what is a program director but a disc jockey that couldn't do it? What is a consultant? A program director that couldn't do it.
I love that.
Now, when are you going to put your journey down in a book? And this way, then we can sit there and we can hold on to the stories because you have had a very successful life as an actor.
You know what, though? I have issues with that because when I read biographies, it always sounds like, yes, I did this and I did this. Yeah, you believe what happened to me and this, and it's all me and I and myself and this. And it just, they don't make me happy to read. Mm-hmm. Now, the old timers, like Peter O'Toole's book and that kind of thing, were fun romps. But I'm not that old. I have not raised that much hell. So I'm not like Peter O'Toole. So I'm not real big on talking about myself, mm-hmm. you know, although I have had some great jobs that I love to talk about. But about me, I'm not big on talking about that because I'll be honest with you, I'm a bore, dude. And don't get me wrong, I am one of my three biggest fans, but I am a bore. I am just a bore. I have animals, I have a wife, and I have a desk. That's like my life, and it's boring.
Do you ever have one of those moments where, you know, because creative people, we go up and down and stuff like that with our emotions. But I mean, I've been accused, and I admit to this, where I'll look at people and I'll say, I'm the greatest actor you will ever meet. And they go, what does that mean? That you will never have a bad day with me. I will always be the greatest actor you'll ever meet.
Wow. That's cocky. When I was an adolescent and I actually, you know, discovered I'm a good actor. Yeah. I can do this and this. I'm a good actor. Oh my God. It kind of went to my head for a while and that I can do anything. But then when I met Bob Fosse, and he was an overused and abused word, but he was a genius. And when you work with one of those guys who are true artistic geniuses, you realize two things, that you're not one and that they are very, very unusual. They are hard to come across. And when you do come across them, you can learn everything. And he taught me more about acting in the 6 months we had together than I have learned in the other 60 years. Yes.
I was going to say, speaking of teaching, you come from a teaching family. I mean, that's one of the things that do you ever find yourself wanting to teach people by way of social media or just through books?
My wife and I have a program. We call it Working Actor. Oh. And we teach. And my wife, I have to give a shout out to my wife because she is my coach. She's also coached all kinds of very famous people, Halle Berry, George Clooney, all kinds of peeps. She's the real deal because she's a real actor. So, and she's this great coach. And I go to her with everything. And like I just got through with the Damon, you know, Giselle movie, and I came to her with this very difficult part I was playing, and I said, I don't know what I'm doing here. And she said, well, let's work it out. And we sat down and went through it. And because it was a very difficult part. He was a drinker. he's got this line of monologue that makes half sense because he's half drunk. And but it has to be very precise, and that a lot of information about the movie is in this monologue. So you have to have it. So it has to be clear, but it's all drunk. And my wife is my coach, and without my coach, I would not have pulled it off. So, you know, a coach is as important as anything, and mine just happens to sleep with me.
Is there a website that where actors can go to learn more about this?
We're gonna start doing like group classes through Cameo.
Nice.
You know, cameo.com, and then also just on YouTube, you can look up Eric Roberts or Liza Roberts, working actor. And but we're going to start doing that, because right now it's just been kind of word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And so many things have become virtual because of the pandemic, you know, so it kind of went that way. But we're going to make it much more public. We're also going to start teaching through Camino Nuevo Charter Academy. So, you know, we'll get out there on socials and let everybody know for sure.
Well, when you guys are ready to rock, you got to come back onto this show so that we can talk about it and spread it across the planet.
Aren't you lovely? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Man, please come back to this show anytime. The door is always going to be open for you, Eric.
You're lovely. Just invite me. I'll show up.
All right. The two of you, be brilliant today, okay?
Thank you so much. Mwah. Kisses.